The National Park System will turn 100 on August 25th, 2016. Many people from John Muir to Ken Burns have told the story of the park's creation and evolution, but what will happen in the next 100 years? Will future generations care about America's national parks as much as past generations? Will rising seas and shrinking budgets forever change the parks? Will technology save them or destroy them? This was Mark Woods' winning proposal to the Eugene Pulliam Fellowship, a $75,000 award given annually to one writer in the country, to spend 1 year in America's national parks looking ahead to the centennial and beyond. Mark Woods is the Metro columnist for the Florida Times-Union. The name of the new book is Lassoing the Sun, A Year in America's National Parks. And it's a great pleasure to welcome Mark Woods to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
What brought you to this particular idea?
Well, I'm a columnist at a newspaper in Jacksonville, Florida. 2011 email popped in my inbox about a fellowship called the Eugene C. Pulliam Fellowship for a mid-career columnist or editorial writer, and I think I deleted it once or twice, and then the third time I looked at it, and it said it allows somebody to basically, whoever wins this fellowship, to spend a year working on kind of one dream assignment. And I thought, well, what would I do if I had a dream assignment? And I thought, I think I thought of a bunch of different things. I thought I'd go to the national parks, but how do I make that kind of weighty enough to be worthy of the fellowship? And kind of thought about how 2016 was going to be the centennial of the National Park Service, and Ken Burns and Ansel Adams and John Muir and many others have beautifully and wonderfully documented the history of the national parks, but I thought, what is the future of the national parks? And that was kind of the, in a nutshell, this proposal I put together for the fellowship, which to my surprise won. And so the following year I was off from my regular job, off in the national parks.
And it should be noted, as you do in the book, that you have long had a love for our national park system.
Right. So I think some of my strongest memories are, you know, of childhood, like a lot of, you know, baby boomers piling in the backseat and fighting with your sisters over the space in the backseat of the station wagon, heading on kind of these long, epic journeys to national parks. And I don't think I could tell you what I got for my 10th birthday or Christmas, but I can tell you vividly the campsite we stayed in at the Redwoods, and you know, what it smelled like, what it sounded like, what my pup tent looked like. I can very vividly remember those details. So I think, yeah, these things, you know, national park memories, it's not just me. Obviously, millions of Americans have these very strong memories of going to the parks that stick with you for, you know, the rest of your life.
There are 59 national parks, 400 National Park Service sites. You visit 15 in the book, and I have to say, as I started reading it, I was a little bit relieved that you didn't have to go to all of them. So that...
Right.
So yeah. you chose and decided what your trip was going to be.
Right. It was kind of, you know, the fellowship kind of was this golden ticket where I could create whatever I wanted. And I tried, yeah, people would say, tell me you have to go to this place or you have to go to that place. Everybody has their favorite where they're kind of passionate about it. And I try and tell them my goal isn't to go to the most parks, and it isn't even to go to the most beautiful ones. I wanted to try and have basically 12 parks, one a month, each one kind of symbolizing something different. And I wanted to mix up the geography, kind of the issues for the future. So that was my plan. And 5 weeks into the year, my mom was diagnosed with a rare inoperable cancer and told she didn't have very long to live. So that dramatically changed my year. I've shifted a lot of the plans so I could be with her. And it initially made it feel kind of this project feel that was the dream project felt meaningless. But the more I thought about it, it made it more meaningful because she loved the park. She volunteered at Saguaro National Park in Tucson, Arizona. And she wanted me to keep with the plan. And for the most part, I did. I kind of stuck with the idea of going to one park a month. And each park kind of took on different meanings because of what I was going through with losing her.
Right. And the book becomes meaningful, and you're writing a lot about family and a lot about legacy and, of course, a lot about the parks.
Yeah, and I think I realized pretty quickly that for everybody, the parks are these very personal places. They're we have these connections to them that are kind of universal. When we all stand on the rim of the Grand Canyon, and we kind of see the same things in the same lighting. So we have that universal experience, but then we all have these very personal experiences from our memories of who we went with, what point of our life we were in. So in one way, it feels kind of self-indulgent, me writing about my experiences and my what I went through. But I think it's the kind of thing that people can relate to. I think that's why I've so far gotten lots of good feedback about it.
You mentioned a moment ago that your intention was not to visit the most beautiful or the most popular parks. But I assume when you take on a project like this, inevitably you're going to end up at Yellowstone, you're going to end up at the Grand Canyon, and you're going to end up at Yosemite.
Right. I kind of felt like those, you have to go to those. You're right. I mean, Yellowstone's the first, and those, you're right, those three kind of just feel like, we have 59, but those feel like even more iconic. So I tried to, have reasons to go to each of them. Just partly I felt like they had to be part of the project, partly because I just wanted an excuse to go to all of them. And I had been to those three before, but Grand Canyon I've gone back to many times, but I had not been back to Yosemite since I was probably 12 years old. I had not been back to Yellowstone since a big cross-country trip we did when I was a kid. So I was seeing them at a very different point in my life, obviously, and there's a reason they're iconic. Those are pretty amazing places, that's for sure.
Did you go to each park with the same agenda, with the same list of things that you wanted to accomplish, or did it really vary depending on where you were going?
It definitely varied, because I had those kind of try to focus on a specific issue in each place. And for instance, Saguaro, when I went to Saguaro National Park in Tucson, I figured that I'd focus on the vegetation, this cactus that we think of when we think of the West, although it's really not in much of the West. It's in this corner of it. What are the threats to that cactus, and kind of have that represent threats to vegetation across the country. And I wanted to have one park represent kind of climate change. And I thought about Glacier, but I thought that's almost, I've read so much about the glaciers are disappearing there. So I kind of went the other extreme. I went to the Dry Tortugas off the Florida Keys, and how the water is rising there. And if, in another 100 years, it seems, if the predictions are right, that the giant fort there will not be there. It'll be wiped out by rising sea levels. So I went there with a specific topic. So I kind of I went to Yosemite to think in terms of kind of the idea of loving our parks to death. I went there in August, which some people would say is crazy, to go to Yosemite Valley and the time it's most packed, but I kind of wanted to do that purposefully and think about that idea of loving our parks to death.
The one thing that becomes very clear in the book is, and I guess this comes from your experience as a kid, is that you wanted this, in most cases, to be a family occasion.
Right. My wife was still working, and my daughter was going to school, so it wasn't kind of pile the family in the van and disappear for a year kind of thing. But yes, they went. I start by telling the story of going to the Redwoods because I went there, as I said, when I was like about 9 or 10. I wanted to take my daughter there at the same time, and this was before the year began, and I didn't know it was going to be the last trip with my mom. So we had the multi-generational experience there, and then I took my wife and daughter to Yellowstone. And yes, that having that bond, hopefully that my daughter will forever remember going to Yellowstone, that trip, just the way I remember some of my childhood trips. So there certainly is that element of, you know, I think about the future of the parks, and it really is, do we, you know, that was one of my epiphanies kind of during the year, was the Organic Act of 1916, and we think of it as forever preserving these places, but I think it's really a daily thing. Each generation has to preserve these things, and both as a nation and as individuals. So have I handed the parks down to my daughter the way my mom and dad handed them down to me? And I think if, when I thought about that question maybe 5 years ago, I would have said, I don't know, maybe. But I've tried, I hope now that I have, even though it was not necessarily easy to, some of these trips were a pain. And I think back to some of the trips I did as a kid, and I'm like, oh yeah, I did, we had some fights with my sister, and times when we were complaining about the cold and the rain, and why do we have to do this? And now, like I said, that's some of my strongest favorite memories of childhood involve those trips. So I think our lives are so busy, so hectic, it's tempting not to do the kind of trips that we did. And I think that's a mistake. I think we need those kind of trips.
I was struck, you mentioned Yellowstone as the first national park, and then you also visit the Flight 93 National Memorial, which is one of our newest.
Right. I wanted, you know, obviously the national parks are partly about preserving American history, and so I wanted a piece of the book to involve that. And instead of going to a Civil War site, I thought it'd be more intriguing to go to this place that is going to preserve the history and tell the story that all of us, most of us, lived through, but that my daughter does not remember. She was born that year, and obviously in another 100 years, none of the visitors will remember it. So I find that place fascinating, of a telling a historical story. Beyond that, there's a family in town, a woman whose brother was on Flight 93, and I went with their family in 2006 for the 5th anniversary. I went there, and we kind of developed a friendship after that, where we've stayed in close touch. And when I won the fellowship, I said, can we go there together? I want to tell her name's Lori Gudagno, and her brother was Richard. I said, I want to be able to try and tell Richard's story and tell the story of the place through him. And he was a U.S. Fish and Wildlife Ranger who his whole career was devoted to preserving natural places and fighting for these kind of places. So I wanted to tell his story. I want to tell that story of that park, and then the historical element. And it's a stunningly beautiful place in a different way than a Yosemite or a Yellowstone, but it really is a fascinating piece to the National Park System puzzle.
When you look overall at the project and what you accomplish, what do you think people will get out of, what do you want them to get out of your experience with the parks themselves, and of course to somehow appreciate them as the system as it turns 100 years old?
I've thought about that, and that I think we tend to take them for granted. If you ask somebody, do you love the national parks? They say, of course I do. And then sometimes you ask, when was the last time you went? And it's been a while. And did you take your child to them? And well, yeah, we keep meaning to that. And I'm as guilty as anyone about that. And the project gave me the opportunity to, you know, intensely focus on them for that year. But I've now tried to be better about trying to plan things, because I do think it's important if we're going to pass these places on to the next generation. It doesn't just happen magically. We need to go visit them. We need to take loved ones with us. And I think that is probably what I would hope people would take from it, would would remind them that these places are special and remind them to get out in them. And that's the best way to advocate, I think, for the parks, is not some big dramatic gesture. It's just to go to them and take a loved one with you.
Well, the name of the book is Lassoing the Sun, A Year in America's National Parks. It is published by Thomas Dunn Books. Mark, thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure to speak with you.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you very much. Again, the title of the book, Lassoing the Sun. The book is published by Thomas Dunn Books. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.